Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way to learn about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad and we're joined by top London radio DJ and self-professed Japanophile, Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you?
I'm all right. I've had a busy week, Chris, but I'm through the other end. The weather's weird, I keep slipping over, but everything's
You're
fine,
surviving
Chris.
The Beast from the East.
The Beast from the East.
What a horrible title.
It's horrible, isn't it? I find it a little bit xenophobic, a little bit distasteful. The actual storm front that's kind of rolled into London at the moment is it's called Emma, which is my niece's name. And I love Emma. She's brilliant. She's a brilliant baby. But now it's tainted my relationship with my niece, Chris. It's terrible.
Well, it feels like the tables have turned somewhat, given how where I am, like in North Japan, the snow is absurd. Mm. But actually, there's no snow here now. And as I frolic in the morning sun, you're buried under a foot of snow in the UK.
So covered in sakura.
I feel rather smug. I feel rather smug about that. This podcast, so we've been going, this is our fourth episode now, and things are going all right. I saw that we're on the front page of iTunes last week.
Yes.
Which is a good thing, I think. I'm not a podcast genius, you are. But I think that's a good thing, right?
It's great for marketing, and we became too big to ignore. Too big to fail, like all the best banks.
So I think what's happened is quite a few people have discovered our podcast but don't actually know who we are. So maybe we should quickly introduce who we are to those who don't know who we are.
Well, shall I introduce you? I mean, Chris Broad is a YouTuber who lives in Sendai, Japan. I mean, you've lived all over the place, Chris, haven't you?
And
basically, he's been doing videos for a couple of years. Before that, he was a language teacher or language teaching assistant, as we learnt last week, and who could beatbox inexplicably.
And
he's been doing that for a few years, and he's very popular. And you will have seen one of his videos online. When I hang out with him, it's hard to get close to him because he's covered in groupies.
Very kind of you, Pete. Well, Pete is a very big deal. Not only did he get to interview Ed Sheeran last week, the biggest musician in the world right now, but he's also Twitter verified and he has his very own Wikipedia page, the very pinnacle of success, those three things.
Chris, why do you get annoyed about the Twitter verified thing? I don't understand this obsession. I mean, it's weird that you're not. Right.
Well, one day. One can only dream. How was it interviewing Ed Sheeran?
He's a nice bloke. I mean, the thing with those red carpet things is that, you know, it's just...
Awards, right?
Yeah, Brit Awards, last Wednesday at the O2 in Greenwich, London.
Like the Grammys, but a little bit more rough around the edges.
A little bit, yeah.
For those who don't know what the Brit Awards are.
So all the acts just come down the red carpet, and it's a nightmare trying to grab hold of everyone. So, you know, you get certain promises. We were promised Dave Grohl. We didn't get Dave Grohl. We had to settle for Ed Sheeran, Rag and Bone Man.
Had to settle for Ed Sheeran.
You make
it sound bad. He could be listening to this podcast.
Right.
I say that because he seems to like Japan quite a lot. I think...
Okay.
Back in 2016, though, it was in the news that he was backpacking around Japan for a month through rural Japan. And for a time, I thought I was going to bump into him. You know, there'd be me, like, jogging through a rice field in rural Japan, which is exactly what I do. I jog through rice fields.
In those hats.
Thought, how amazing would it be if I, like, bumped into Ed Sheeran? It'd be like Notting Hill, but in Japan, and with the distinct absence of Notting Hill. But and then we could, like, go for drinks, and he could, like, plug the channel, and it'd be amazing. Only thing is, I've only heard... I don't actually know more than two Ed Sheeran songs.
No, I mean, that would have been a difficult...
If he'd gone, Chris, what are your three favourite songs of mine? I would have gone, oh, so much to choose from. Shape of You, the one with the Galway girl, and the other ones you did. And well, that's, yeah.
Well, if he's a Japanophile, if he wanted to go to Japan, he will have Googled it. He will have YouTubed it. And you are quite prominent. That's how I found you, for crying out loud.
It's
I wanted
possible.
To learn a bit about the culture. So, like, yeah. Chances
One
are...
One dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ed Sheeran, biggest fan. Definitely. Definitely. I don't know if you heard, there was a little earthquake in North Japan the other day. It wasn't serious. It was only
right.
level 3. But because my apartment was built in the 1980s, when there's even the slightest of earthquakes, the entire building turns into a rocking horse. So I'm on the fourth floor.
Right.
And it's absolutely terrifying. Have you ever experienced an earthquake in your many encounters or many trips to Japan?
No, never. I think...
Never?
I've been so lucky, or unlucky, possibly. I don't know. But, like, when they talk about counterweighting...
No, it's a good thing.
When they talk about counterweighting buildings and kind of having a building, you know, those kind of anti-earthquake measures they put into buildings, I still don't know how they work, Chris. I still don't know how they manage to do it.
The anti-earthquake measure is to make the building out of paper, basically. So there's no buildings made of bricks here, babe. This building I'm in is made of effectively cardboard.
Mm.
And the idea is that the building kind of sways a bit more. It's not as brittle as bricks, right? So it won't shatter. Like, it's amazing to think how resilient these buildings are. When I used to live in Yamagata, I didn't feel a single earthquake in 3 years. That's a lie. I felt two earthquakes, right? And here in Sendai, there was a point when we were getting them every day for like 2 weeks in a row.
Jeez.
Last year. So this part of Japan's a lot more seismically active. And, yeah, it's not particularly fun.
Do you reckon it plays into the culture somehow? Because, I mean, the emotional kind of baggage of the earth being angry with you all the time, it would weigh heavy on my shoulders, to be honest, Chris.
It's a little bit intimidating, yeah. I mean, the first time it happened, you get these phone alarms, like your phone goes mental when there's an earthquake, if it's a major one.
The first
time, I was sitting in my apartment. I'd lived in Japan 3 months, and I was sitting at my desk eating some fried chicken. I'm not even lying, I was eating fried chicken because I remember it so vividly. Just sitting there on the floor, eating my fried chicken, and all of a sudden the building started swaying left to right, and there's this ominous hum. When you have an earthquake, you hear this low-level, kind of really low-level humming
right.
noise, and it's really intimidating. And it scared the hell out of me, and I didn't know what to do, so I ran up, I grabbed my fried chicken.
And, grab everything you
I
loved.
Ran to the... Take everything you need. And I ran to the door frame because I thought,
oh, yeah,
you're supposed to stand in the door frame because if the ceiling comes down, the door frame's fine, apparently, even though it definitely wouldn't be. Especially in that apartment, I was on the first floor, so four stories would have come down. And I don't think a little tacky wooden door frame can resist four stories of concrete. But yeah, that was my experience.
Eating a man alone,
first experience ever.
Bracing himself against a doorway, eating fried chicken, his greasy hands against the paintwork, Chris. That's
what
an adorable sight.
But, I mean, this week, I wanted to dive into the topic this week of space in Japan.
Oh, what do you mean?
The Japanese kind of... Well, the Japanese attitude towards space.
Oh, not the Final Frontier, not the space race.
No, we're not
going
to talk the Japan space race. That's for another podcast, when something actually happens that's interesting. But I thought we'd talk a bit about Japanese space in Japan, how they see size and scale in the context of Japanese apartments and capsule hotels.
Okay. That's an interesting thing, because that is one of the first things you sort of realise once you've wedged yourself into your hotel shower unit. You go, wow, they are really efficient with space here, because they have to be.
They are. I mean, all vloggers come to Japan, the first thing they do is make a video about Japanese apartments, because it always seems to get big views. And
right.
It was my first video, and I don't know why the world is fascinated by Japanese apartments, but it always seems to get millions of views.
Mm,
except my video didn't.
And that's
unfortunately
why
my video is the exception.
There's a door in where's that place? Harajuku. There's a place, there's a little door that these that I think might be a shop or maybe a little museum for little girls, and you walk past it and there's a little door and it's like it's about as high as your knee, and little girls have to kind of like crawl away into this doorway, and I'm always thinking, what's in there? But it seems completely normal to everyone.
Have you not ventured in yourself?
No, because it looks
what lies within. wouldn't go down too well.
No, for the same reason I shouldn't be in, you know, little girls' clothes shops. I'm not going to venture inside. But I think that's what it is. I think it might be a Japanese little girls' clothes shop or possibly museum. But either way, I ain't getting on my hands and knees and, you know, this horrible old man going, let me in. Let me into your tiny house.
Probably not advisable.
No.
No. Have you ever stayed in a Japanese apartment? Have you ever gone in? Have you ever used, like, Airbnb or anything like that?
I discovered Airbnb in Tokyo, so every time I kind of stay in the same place, to be honest. It's this tiny, tiny little flat. Very, very cheap in Shibuya. I mean, I'm sure I can link someone with the Airbnb link if completely necessary.
Free publicity. Free publicity on the Born Japan podcast.
I know, right? But it's just this dude's house, basically. It's like a really small apartment. It has two beds, but it's just one big room. It's incredibly convenient and price efficient when it comes to having three or four people. But, I mean, you are living on top of each other. Again, the thing that always surprised me, the thing that always got me excited and interested with stuff is the modular bathrooms they have in these tiny apartments. So, like, they're bathrooms that are just pretty much one piece. They're taken in three or four pieces, nailed together, sealed. They call it like a unit bath. I think it's a 5 or 6 piece bathroom. It's got a toilet in there, sink, shower module. They just screw everything together, seal it up. It's an incredible piece of engineering. Very deep baths as well. Surprisingly deep baths. Maybe it's got something to do the fact that Japanese people love an onsen.
I don't know why the baths are so deep. It's like, yeah, even baths in Japan are different to the West in size and scale. They're not long. They're kind of deep. Mm. And I think it... I don't actually know why that is. I don't.
Do you reckon what
I
do
know is Japanese families... Well, I think a lot... Most Japanese families have their kind of bath in the evening. Mm. So, and they have it one by one. So, like, you know, the kids will go in, then afterwards the adults go in, and they all use the same water.
Oh.
They all use the same water, and they have a little lid that they put on top of the bath while all the water's still in it.
Keep it warm.
So they kind of recycle and reuse the water, which is either a good or bad thing, depending on your your views on hygiene.
And then, they pour out the water into their ramen to make their cup noodles for the evening. Wow, that is efficient.
How distasteful.
Literally.
Yeah, I used to, in the winter months, I used to sit in my bath in my apartment, and because I couldn't afford like heating, and it was so damn cold, and I didn't really have a decent heating system because most apartments and houses don't have like central heating in Japan. They just use a kerosene heater or an air conditioning unit, which is what I'm using now, an aircon that switches into a heater.
All right.
So I used to use my bath as a way of staying warm and not dying of like hypothermia. So I just sit in my bath, scrunched up like in a ball, because I couldn't actually have my legs going fully out because it was quite a short bath. But it's really weird, you know.
Yeah,
you're,
that is a little
you're
bit
submerged and, up to your neck in water, but you can't stretch out.
And then the family from next door would come in and use the water, and it'd be just wonderful.
When I look back at my time in my first... I've lived in, I think, 3 Japanese apartments now, and I look back at it all pretty favourably.
Mm.
Like, my first apartment, which I put in my first ever video... I liked it. It was quite cool. It wasn't that big. It was you just have one room where you have your kitchen and your washing machine and stuff with the bathroom built on. And then the main room, which is the sitting room, is also your bedroom.
Right.
So every night when I'd come home from work, I'd have to roll out my futon. Which obviously, you sleep on a futon in most apartments in Japan. Sleeping on the floor is actually quite pleasant. It might sound bad. Like, to people in the UK, you think, oh, the floor. But actually... I slept really well. For the 3 years I slept on, I don't know why, I don't know what the magic behind it was, given that the futon was only about 3 inches thick. It was surprisingly comfortable, and I slept very well on it.
When I've used, in like a ryokan or something, when I've used like a little futon, it was just like a rolled out kind of thin duvet, really. It's not really anything, there's no support there, and a tatami mat underneath. I've slept better than that's I've right. slept anywhere. It's incredible. Like, we in the West, I think, we're kind of, like, cajoled, mainly because, I guess, you know, in the podcast game specifically, we get advertised mattresses all the time. We're told that, you know, the squishiest mattress is the better, this and that. But when you actually get down to it, it's such a rich, lovely sleeping on the floor.
I don't know what it is. I think it's the idea of sleeping on the floor is quite comforting. I don't know. Matt, that's the only thing I can think of. sleeping on the... Because you can't fall out of bed. There's no risk of that ever happening.
You're such a drunkard, Chris.
You just sort of roll out onto the floor, yeah. Always reverts to falling out of things. But, like, there's something quite comforting about, yeah. you know, you can roll over and not fall out. But I slept well. The only downside to my apartment was my kitchen. Japanese kitchens are fantastically, tragically small. And I had to use my ironing board as kitchen space. For 3 years, my ironing board stood in the kitchen next to the sink. And I used to, like, prepare all my food on it. It was quite a surreal wow. experience. But I liked it. I felt like I was in a movie or something.
Did you have, like, a situation...
Whenever something bad happens, just make it feel like you're in a movie.
It feels like a movie. A happy movie. A movie when I get a disease. When a man gets a disease from using eating off an ironing board. Actually, to be honest, I've got, like, an apartment, you know, with three rooms, a kitchen, a front room, a bedroom, and a bathroom, obviously. I use my ironing board as a projector stand. So when I'm in bed, I can watch...
As a projector stand?
Yeah, just to watch a bit of Netflix. Lovely old job.
I think we've uncovered a whole new market for ironing boards.
It really is.
It should be rebranded as, like, some sort of unique item. Although, I guess we're just using them as tables. So it's not quite that special, is it?
I think the Japanese word for iron might actually be iron. Now...
Iron.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's just, you know, how the R's and L's get pronounced out there. But, like, trying to order that over hotel through the hotel phone system, iron.
Iron die. It means like ironing board. Iron die.
I just couldn't. But the one thing that is very exciting, if you're a Westerner, the iron that is probably most popular in Japanese hotels, they're all wireless. So you've got a little stand that plugs into the wall. You put it on the stand for a bit, and then you take it off, and it's completely wireless. Oh, you could iron something in the next room.
Now, you say that. Well, you say that like it's a good thing, but I actually had a problem with that a few months ago. I made a video actually called like "A Day in My Life in Tokyo," and I went to Tokyo to win some sort of award on stage. And before the award, I had to put on a nice shirt. And I pulled the shirt out of my bag. It was crumpled. It looked dreadful. And I was like, no problem. I'll iron it. And I called in the iron. It took me 2 hours to work out how to use it, by which point I was screwed because I had to go down to the award ceremony. So I had to wear a jumper in the end to hide the tragically terrible shirt. So damn the wireless irons of Japan. Damn them all to hell.
Fantastic stuff. But, I mean, you were telling me a little bit about that tiny escalator. You showed me a video about, like, you know, like, we're talking about size and space and stuff like that. There's this famous escalator in Kawasaki.
Yes, the Poochiculator.
I'm obsessed with this thing.
Poochie means small, right? Poochie means small. You use it for lots of things.
Okay.
Like Poochie potato, like small potato, or Poochie pan is like small bread.
Oh, okay.
I just made that up. But anyway, Poochiculator, the tiny escalator, the smallest in the world.
Wow.
Guinness World Record, 1989. It's in Kawasaki in Tokyo. and it's no less than, what, five? It's five steps, isn't it?
Five steps just going round and round and round. I mean, I imagine there's more steps on the underside of the escalator because that's how escalators work, but maximum 10. Maximum 10 teeth.
It looks like the most pointless thing ever done by humans, given that the escalator only goes down, it doesn't even go up. And after you've ridden the Poochiculator down five stairs, there's another five stairs, real, actual stairs, you have to walk down anyway. Why didn't they make a 10-stair escalator? But I'm guessing they thought, I know, let's invest in the world's smallest escalator.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll bring our shopping centre praise and applause.
Why?
And it didn't
make it...
really... It's so weird.
Why make it five steps, though? That's what I don't understand. It's like, make it two.
I think they must have done it. I think they must have done it for the world record.
You reckon?
They must have gone, it's our shopping centre, what can we do? What's the one thing we can do to stand out? I know, a tiny escalator that doesn't even have any practical use.
In the Japanese supermarket around the corner from me in Piccadilly, they used to sell a lot of Japanese food. They used to sell takoyaki, which is one of my favourite dishes. Like, oh, great.
Was it edible?
Yeah, it's good. No, they make it fresh there, so it's decent. It's not like... I remember buying in a department store takoyaki space food. So, like...
How would you explain takoyaki to listeners that don't know what it is?
Like okonomiyaki, but in balls. Skills. Like a eggy omelette, but in ball form, and there's a
You haven't sold it.
No, I haven't really.
An eggy ball.
Eat my eggy balls!
You're ridiculous. It's a chopped up octopus in batter. With a bit of mayonnaise on and a bit of Worcester sauce with fish flakes.
Yeah, it's so
I don't know if that
good.
Sells it either, but that's what it is. It is good. It's frighteningly addictive. It's a great kind of late-night food. Whenever I'm in Osaka, I walk down the street, I grab some takoyaki and I win at life. It's just amazing.
the Japanese supermarket around the corner from me in Piccadilly, London, they've got an escalator that goes up, but it's very thin. It's unspeakably thin, and it gives me that horrible anxiety that makes me think I'm standing on the wrong side of the escalator. But you can't stand anywhere else because it's single file. It's a single file escalator up and a single file escalator down, and you rarely see that kind of business, to be honest. I think Tokyo and Osaka have two different rules about which side you're supposed to stand on and walk up on an escalator. And for anyone who lives in the city, knowing the wrong one is very upsetting. It's very worrying.
You know, I never remember which one's which. I think Tokyo, you go up on the left...
Right.
Osaka, right?
Yeah, I think that might be the case. I mean, if we're getting that wrong,
I mean, I forget every time, and then when I arrive, I kind of look what everyone's doing and follow the pattern. I think Tokyo left, Osaka right.
Right, okay.
but quote me on that.
But the Puchikulator escalator would have been quite useful in Tokyo Hands. Now, Tokyo Hands is a department store, a departo, I believe they call them, in Shibuya. I mean, they have them all over the place, I presume, Chris.
Tokyo Hands. There's one in Sendai, yeah. What's your obsession with Tokyo Hands?
Well, it's...
People love this store. People, when it arrived in Sendai a year ago, it's basically a store that sells everything.
It sells everything.
It sells everything.
So it's the greatest department store in the known universe. And I bring it up now because the Puchikulator escalator would have been perfect because they've got half floors. So you're never on the third floor, you're never on the fourth floor. Yeah, they've got like the 3.5 floor, the fourth floor, or the 4.5 floor. And it kind of goes around in a circle, like a kind of, it's just a winding staircase up and down. It's weird. But it's made of many floors. Usual department store stuff, you've got floors for like beauty and stationery, food utensils. There's a floor where you can buy pets. It's like a proper old school 70s Harrods kind of thing. So you can go and buy a turtle or a guinea pig or something.
You're comparing it to Harrods.
You're
comparing Tokyo Hands to Harrods.
It's that it's
like,
good.
That's like comparing a Ferrari to a Peugeot.
The basement floor has like a craft floor, and it's basically got every material
does,
you could possibly
really
need, but in really weird shapes. So if you want like a 3/4-inch pipe of Perspex, roughly a metre long, you can have it. If you need a 2-metre version of that, it's got that as well. If you need a giant polystyrene orb...
Things you didn't even know existed.
I know! If you,
yeah,
you got...
I think I went in there, actually, and I found a polystyrene head.
Yes!
And I thought, how can I use a polystyrene head?
They've got
like,
polystyrene ears for the polystyrene heads. I swear that the basement of Tokyo Hands has everything that's needed to make all the other stuff in the building.
I'm starting to think you've been sent by Tokyo Hands to plug Tokyo Hands. You ridiculous boy.
I've never seen anything like it. It's beautiful. But yes. So we could do with a Puchikulator on that because they've only got half floors and it's very confusing for me anyway.
Sweet chocolate.
Wow.
And we're back, Chris. We're back from the break. You all right, mate?
Oh, yeah. Had a quick shot of coffee. We're back in the game.
Whoa!
Now, capsule hotels. Have you ever stayed in a capsule hotel?
No. I've always promised myself I would, and then I never did.
What's your image of a capsule hotel? In fact, did you know, you can actually do it now in London. They opened a brand new one in London Bridge, in London, obviously. They opened a new one just this month.
Did they?
So I think it's about £25 a night. Just think, the first capsule hotel opened in 1979 in Osaka. It took 30 years, almost 30 years, to arrive in London.
That's so weird. I think that the British might be a bit more... Because the British are very into buying their own houses. The British are very, like, you know, a man's home is his castle and all that stuff. I reckon people might get a bit... I think they might get a bit iffy. But, I mean, perfect for,
snobby.
Like... Yeah, perfect for the youngsters, I'd say. I'd be bang up for it. I think...
I can't see anyone under 30 or, like, diving into a capsule or a pod on a night out. But, I mean, they're perfect for a good night out.
Well, exactly, if you live out
why
in the sticks.
That's why they started in Osaka. Like, the idea was, after a late night... A bit of late night drinking, which is common in Japan, right? You have to go drinking after work often. You can just dive into a capsule. And they also sell shirts, so you can actually change clothes in the capsule hotel before you go back into work the next day. So you don't get embarrassed going home to your wife drunk at 2 a.m. in the morning. So that's what capsule hotels were kind of originally for.
That's
and now
amazing.
These days are everywhere across Japan.
The kind of image I get is, because obviously I've seen, like, you know, the Japanese salarymen kind of, like, lying on the streets. Sometimes they'll rent out, like, a karaoke room for the night and just sleep there. You've got love hotels. It just seems to be this culture of just never going home. Everything's fine. I live to work, and then I work to drink, and then I just lie down wherever I can, really. It's incredible.
You think that would resonate with British people
after
a long night of drinking, but alas. Yeah, no, I think the idea of plunking into a 6 foot 7 inch, I think they're about 4 foot wide and 3 foot high.
Right.
So it's like going into a coffin, basically. I think the first time I did it, I woke up the next morning and I was like, where am I? What is this? Like, I thought I was dead or something. It took me like half a minute to work out what was going on. But I've had pretty mixed experiences with capsule hotels. Like,
okay.
On the one hand, they could be good. I filmed one last year which had two pods. One to, like, sleep in and one below where I could, like, sit and watch TV. It was like a tiny mat pod.
And in between a little escalator to get you down to the bottom pod.
That would have been perfect. I hate climbing into a capsule. It feels obscene. But I actually had to... Another time, though, I stayed in one in Akihabara, and I had to check out. I was going to plan to stay there 3 nights, and one night in, I just couldn't sleep because there were so many people coming in and out, and it was a lot of foreigners were using it, and I think the reason capsule hotels work so well in Japan is because Japanese people are a lot more kind of respectful and kind of... a lot more self-aware of how noisy they're being. In this one, they weren't. They didn't care. It was like I was in a party.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
you know, there was so much noise going on. So the next day I went down and I was like, oh, I'm checking out. And they were like, they were shocked. The staff were like, oh, you're checking out the first day in? And I was like, yes. And they looked so uncomfortable at this revelation that I couldn't break it to them. The reason I was leaving was because it was really bad. I literally said, oh, I've got a business meeting in Sendai today, so I have to go now. And they were like, oh, okay. But I was so embarrassed. But yeah, no, it was awful. So a bit of a mixed bag for me. But for 2,000 yen a night, you can't complain, I guess.
You really can't complain.
What do you expect?
Or if you do complain, you can just leave and tell a lie to the person who's looking after
just
you.
Pretend you've got a business meeting.
Yeah, were you really... Because, I mean, presumably you spent the rest of the time in Akihabara, and did you ever run into the people who you'd lied to? Were you looking over your shoulder all the time?
Yeah, that would have been really awkward. Like, I thought you were at a business meeting. No. I never know whether or not to recommend capsule hotels. I guess it depends on what kind of a person you are. If you're backpacking alone, yeah, go for it. It's about the same price as staying at a hostel, though. Mm. And I do think capsule hotels are a little bit better than a hostel dorm, as you get a bit more privacy and your very own TV jammed in there. But personally, I avoid them these days and just stay in just really cheap hotels. For 2,000 yen, for about 5,000 yen more, you get your own room, so...
I think with terrible jet lag, which is what you always get in Japan, I think just going from love hotel to love hotel would probably work, to be honest. I'm sure we'll come on to that subject fairly soon. But, like, staying hour by hour, just doing 5 hours here, waking up, wandering around, then going back for another couple of hours, paying by the hour or the 2 hour or the 3 hour, I think would work for me, to be honest. That's kind of my routine. Oh, man, it's dreadful. I always wanted to stay in that the Nakagin apartment building in Tokyo, that beautiful
Nakagin capsule hotel,
futuristic.
It's not a hotel, actually. It's just stunning, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's like a big metal bush made of washing machines. They were like, it was like loads of different pods. They were designed to be modular. You could add and replace them as and when they became unworkable or broken. There was actually a guy renting out an apartment. Give it a Google, Nakagin apartment building in Tokyo. I can't remember which part of Tokyo.
Yeah, definitely check it out if you've never heard of it or seen it. It's actually in the Wolverine movie.
Oh, is it?
The Wolverine movie set in Japan. He stays there, which helped like publicise it. But yeah, right. It's basically, if you imagine the idea of a capsule hotel, imagine the capsules are kind of built, are kind of like broken down and kind of built and stuck together into a pile, a bit like Lego. It's a really wacky looking building, all the capsules sticking out. The idea was you could take your capsule, which is about the size of a small apartment, you could take it with you, so when you moved, you would just take your capsule out of the entire building, stick it on the back of a lorry, and then drive off to your new kind of home.
Yeah, I think they were planning on making loads of these buildings, these modular buildings, these modular pods and stuff. And they look so kind of like 70s space age kind of thing. I mean, now they're
stunning, but
now, it's a stunning building. But now, I mean, it looks like it'll probably demolish because I don't think there's questions as to whether it's earthquake resistant. It's covered in asbestos. it's a nightmare asbestos.
But I read that the cost of removing one pod, like if you have a home there and you've got your little pod where your apartment's in, the cost of removing one of those pods was equal to just bulldozing the whole building. So the concept really didn't work.
Yeah, well, I think they were planning on having so many of these kind of complexes of these apartments that could be moved around. I think the economy of scale would have helped there, but, you know, just building one and
basically,
going...
One big bloody pile of Jenga, isn't it?
It's an interesting thing. There was a guy who used to rent it out, actually, on Airbnb. I think I really wanted to do it, but I didn't get on it quick enough. And I think he's either all booked or he's just kind of left the site. But fascinating place to
If you're in Tokyo, I definitely recommend checking it out, though.
Oh, it's an amazing building.
It's right next to Shinbashi in Ginza.
Right.
So if you're doing some shopping in the high-end shopping district of Ginza, have a little walk over and you'll be able to see it there near Ginza. Definitely on my top 10 list of things to see in Tokyo.
Definitely.
If you're into your architecture anyway. It's a stunning building.
Chris, one thing you wanted to do, one thing I wanted to do as well, I think it's really interesting for people who love Japan, who want to travel to Japan. Maybe they've not been in Japan before. Maybe chucking in a bit of Japanese vocabulary. It might be a nice feature for the show.
Yeah, vocabulary relating to size.
Yeah, exactly.
Given the topic, I'll do a test for you. because you know you're Japanese.
No, I don't.
All right, you don't. But you know a bit, don't you?
I know a little
bit.
You
know a bit more than you let on.
I can order a bit of food.
Well, last week you revealed you know the word chigaimasu, which is quite impressive. That's good. Unless you just, it's a complete fluke, and that was one of the words you learned. But that's quite an impressive thing to know. So let's do a little test. What is the word for big?
You know what? I know this one, Chris, and I'll tell you for why. I've got a story behind the word. Is it Oki? Oki?
It is, yeah, Oki, yeah.
O-O-K-I-I. Oki.
Good.
I learned the word Oki because I was in a restaurant the first time I went to Japan. In Japan, they don't have menus. They have those machines in the doorway that you have to choose your dish and press the buttons and you get a ticket dispensed, and then you give that ticket that says what you want. You give it to the chef and he cooks the food.
Common in ramen shops, yeah.
Yeah, and what I'd done was I'd ordered enough for like a family of five on my first trip to Japan. And I think the man thought I was a competitive eater. He could not believe how much food I'd ordered.
Oh, my Lord.
So I...
Why did you order so much?
Because I just kept pressing the buttons. And the tickets kept coming out. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to get my money back.
Pinball machine. Pinball wizard. The ramen machine.
Oh, I'd eaten so much food, Chris. It was terrible. So I Googled...
Were you able to finish it all?
God, no. I left most of it. That's why I know the word. Because I Googled, too big. It says Oki Sugiru. and so I went, rubbing the stomach and going, Oki Sugiru. Gomenasai, so me was saying I'm so sorry, and sort of left with my tail between my legs and my stomach over my trousers. It's actually Sugiru. Perfect. Sugiru, and the shortening of that Sugi is quite an interesting one. So when people are drunk, Nomi Sugi is kind of like a slang term, is that right, for being a drunkard? Nomi Sugi and Tabi Sugi, drunk and eat too much. Yeah.
Nomi Sugi. Sugiru is a great word to know for anything, basically.
Beautiful.
Oki Sugiru is too big, or... Isogashi Sugiru is too busy, you know.
Ah.
You can slap Sugiru on the back of most adjectives, and it means too big. Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right, let's try a second word. If we've done big, what's small?
That would be chisai. Chisai.
Chisai.
Chisai.
Chisai. Yeah, chisai. Good. Good. It's, stories there.
No stories there, but I always think of a chisel. I always think of a tiny chisel to remember it.
Oh, very good. So you're using mnemonics to learn words.
Whenever I learn a new word, I always just draw a little picture. So I've got like loads for different things.
Yeah,
like,
I did that when I was diving into learning. I used to do that. It does, it definitely does. What about really big? Do you know there's a certain word for like really big?
Oh, no, I don't know these at all. I don't know really big. Oh.
Really big. Well, it's kind of like... To mean like Oki Sugiru, you say like Dekai.
Ah.
Dekai. Like, Dekai. Just imagine deck chair and I.
No, I'm thinking Deckard from Blade Runner, but really big.
Good. Good. Dekai. What about wide? Wide.
I know this one. A man once described my forehead as being rather hiroi. And I googled the word and I was not impressed with his description of my massive forehead.
That is brilliant.
Hiroi.
Oh man, what a great way to learn the word hiroi.
I know, right?
Hiroi. You actually use the word hiroi in lots of ways. For example, if you're talking about your apartment, right, you wouldn't say it's big, you wouldn't use oki, you'd kind of say hiroi. So you often use like words like wide and the opposite. You use wide and narrow in the context of size and scale in an actual kind of building, things like that. The way they use big and small is a little bit different. So do you know the opposite of wide in Japanese?
No, I definitely don't.
It's semi.
Right, okay. Well, that's gone in the noggin.
So if I'm like referring to my apartment, I'll be like, このアパートはちょっと狭いね。It's a little bit narrow.
Ah.
A little bit narrow.
Ah. Well, semi, don't bash into things, Chris. So what have we learned? We've learned Oki. We've learned Oki. That's big. Chizai. Small.
Small.
Dekai.
Really big.
Really big. Dekai.
Good.
Wide is hiroi.
Hiroi.
My massive hiroi forehead. And
Pete's and head is Hiroi.
Hiroi-ness. Semai being narrow, of course. So there's your vocabulary Semai, for the week. Yeah. We're so educational, Chris.
Yes, by the end of this series, you'll be a master of Japanese.
I know, right? It's incredible, probably, isn't it? So let's move on to the wacky news of the week. I always like a wacky news story. That's kind of what Japan's wacky all about, really. I mean, it's something else. There are some new kind of chips, new kind of fries from McDonald's Japan. They've added a new sauce, Chris, and I'm not on board.
I can't say I'm surprised. What is it?
It's bolognese sauce and cheese.
Bolognese sauce and cheese. Oh, my God.
Cacete mio.
I don't know if I can get on that.
Cheese, bolognese. Ugh.
Well, I mean, they had that thing a few years ago, cheese McDonald's fries, where it was just some cheese sauce.
Right.
And that was all right. Mm. I did a little video on that, and that was ridiculous. That went viral, like got a million views in like 2 days, and it's just me pouring some cheese on some fries. Because the world is obsessed with Japan's attitude towards McDonald's and the way they kind of do things a little bit differently. Will I try bolognese sauce and cheese? Probably not. Does it look good? Have you seen pictures of it?
It looks all right. I mean, I think it's you know, like in America, you get like wet fries, and then you sometimes get a bit of kind of like mince on the top. If it's a very American thing,
but is it actually real like bolognese, or is it just some sort of dodgy powder?
Oh no, it's well, I mean, God knows where that cheese has come from, but certainly there's definitely some mince in there. There's meaty bolognese sauce and cheese, so there's definitely it looks all right. It's not
on
the worst
scale
thing.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being awful and 10 being thoroughly edible looking, what would you give it?
I'd give it a 7. 7.5.
A 7?
I'm going to Tokyo hands on its behind. 7.5.
While we're on the subject of chips or fried foods and things, did you see there was an article that came out the other day? The top YouTuber in Japan, one of the top ones, called Hikikin, a guy who he used to be a top beatboxing dude.
Right.
And then he kind of became a YouTuber as a result. He's now brought out his very own YouTuber chips.
I saw this on Kotaku. I do like a bit of Kotaku. There's a guy who writes, he's based out there, and he just does like, basically he's clearly got copy to file, and he'll just take a picture of like the Tokyo Tower and go, here's a picture from Tokyo, I've done my work for the day, goodbye. I met him briefly, nice bloke, but he did a piece on this guy, and I was like, I'm sure I've seen that guy before. But when he started out doing beatboxing and stuff, he became really big like that. But then he had some kind of makeover, and now he's this kind of larger than life, kind of bleach blonde hair, bespectacled chap. And now he's on our crisps, Chris. Now he's on our crisps.
It's his new kind of ploy to make money. Seems a bit desperate to me. I mean, maybe they're good, I don't know. I didn't see what flavour the chips were. YouTuber flavour, I don't know. But
I think it might have been ready salted, actually, weirdly. I think it was something rather dull and tasteless.
It might work then. I saw the packet of his face, like
on
images
it.
Of his face like all over it, which is, I don't know if that's a thing you want to see while you're diving into the YouTuber chips, but YouTuber crisps.
Yeah, it's all very strange. If you were going to have some
Where's
crisp
broad
rods,
Japan
yeah.
chips? Where,
what
kind
of
Japan crisps?
What flavour would they be? And would they have cheese bolognese sauce on them?
I think they'd be very bitter. like myself. I don't know. I'd probably flavour them like with disappointment flavour. I don't know.
Earthquake.
It's not every day you get to think up your own flavour of crisps.
No. Worcester sauce for me, definitely.
And I don't think we'll be bringing out any crisp-flavoured merchandise or any crisp merchandise anytime soon.
I mean, that's just to come and get me for the crisp companies, isn't it, really? They are salivating at the idea, literally, because their office is covered in crisps. Emails. It's probably time to sort of wrap up and do some emails before we chip off. If you want to get in touch with the show, as always, it's abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. That's abroadinjapan.
Very original name.
abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Obviously, this week we're talking about space, and you guys have kind of led the jury a little bit. You've led the courtroom. You've started talking about how small some of your apartments have been. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, we got a story. One of my favourite emails that you guys sent, it was a girl called Emik in, I think, Hiroshima. She says, just a funny thing happened to me in my small one-room apartment. I went away for 3 days on a trip to Hiroshima, and when I returned, I had a strong odour hit my face as I walked in the door and quickly realised it was soy sauce.
What?
I thought maybe a soy sauce container spilled, but no. Soy sauce was seeping out of the walls from above the stove. I've included pictures, and she has, and they're horrible.
Soy sauce coming out of the walls. Was, like a horror
There was
film.
So much. It was like an ocean of soy sauce. I called the apartment owner, but they never got back to me. But it never happened again.
Oh.
So that's ridiculous. And the pictures are horrible. She's just got a stove, and then just this, like, the wall is just covered in, like,
soy sauce.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Oh, so it's
definitely hasn't ever happened to me. So.
No, I mean, is Emick? I thought Emick was a shortening of Emmerich, the German male name. So if it's a girl, it's a girl. I know soy sauce has a smell. So Emick here, she's inferring here that she never licked the wall. Now, I'm calling bullshine on that. Oh, she clearly licked the wall. She clearly licked the soy sauce off the wall to know it was soy sauce. All right? That's what I'm putting out there, Emick. No judgment. I would do the same. But you did lick that wall. Admit it.
A wall of soy sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
We've also got an email from Tyler.
Tyler!
Who went to a capsule hotel. He said, I travelled to Japan last year for the first time and I made a few crucial mistakes. I stayed in a capsule hotel where I accidentally broke several small rules, like when to wear slippers or where to take them off. And every time something happened, the same guy was always there to point out that I was making mistakes. And while he was nice about it, it was still embarrassing for me. Finally, I wandered into the capsule area and crawled into my capsule. I took a few moments to get situated. And then, as I went to close my little curtain, I realised my third mistake. I wasn't in my capsule. He got into the wrong capsule. It wasn't just any wrong capsule. It was the guy who'd been lecturing him all evening on his many etiquette mistakes. And apparently the guy turned up, looked in the capsule at Tyler, just sort of sat there and was just stood there awkwardly, shaking his head in disbelief. What a great way to kick off your first trip to Japan ever.
Oh, can you imagine just sort of going, well, you've helped me out today, sir, so your reward is a nice spooning.
On a scale of one to awkward, that's pretty spectacular. But do send your emails in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. And, yeah, thanks, Tyler and Emick.
Yeah, they were brilliant.
Soy sauce walls.
Coming out the walls.
And some rather spectacular faux pas. With capsule hotels,
there was a little bit else with Tyler's email. He did mention that he just couldn't find his way out since Shinjuku Station. Now we talked about this before. I think with situations like Shinjuku Station, just get a coin locker and live in there. You live in Shinjuku Station now. It's like a city.
Well, Tyler said in his email before the bit where he went to the capsule hotel, he said like I got lost in Shinjuku Station and I couldn't find my hotel. And he said he was like, in there an hour or two, and he thought about going back home to the, like, literally flying back home because he was getting so depressed. He couldn't get out of it.
It is. It's and an emotional mind problem.
And then he walked around Shinjuku for a bit, couldn't find the hotel, and then he got in a taxi, and the taxi driver was like, oh, it's here. And they drove for, like, 30 seconds, and he found the hotel right away. Going back to what you were saying last week, if you get lost, dive into a taxi.
I know,
let
right?
Let the taxi driver be your guide. Yeah. Top tip if you get lost in Tokyo.
Get in a taxi.
Find a taxi.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for all your emails. Thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for reviewing the Abroad in Japan podcast. I mean, this is very much your gig, Chris, but, you know, I'm just as thankful.
Learning as we go.
Yeah,
it's been good fun so far. So if you are, if you're enjoying the podcast, please do give us a nice little review on the iTunes store. Mm. It's pivotal. I can't even speak. Pivotal,
pivotal.
At this moment when we're still learning how to do it. But yeah, no. Please be nice. Be nice.
Be nice. Even if you've got soy sauce coming out of yours, be nice for crying out loud.
No matter where you might be in the world, thanks for listening, guys, and have a good day. See you next week.
Bye. Don't lick your walls.
ポテトチップスが食べたい気分だ。
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.